From the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The 25th annual Chili Pepper Cross Country Race is Saturday, October 5th at the University of Arkansas's Cross Country Course in Fayetteville. Over 80 college teams and 120 high school teams will be competing, plus 750 runners will participate in 10K and a new 5K open run. Registration and more information are available at chilipepperfestival.org.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, the approaching enrollment period for new Arkansas health care plans means many people in the state have questions about how they'll be affected. Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas seeks answers to some of those questions from three people close to the healthcare issue.
Plus, live theater returns in full force. No fewer than 13 productions will be on area stages in the next month. We'll have a rundown and meet the young, earnest cast of the University of Arkansas's Clean House, the first play of the U of A season. And how mammals in the University of Arkansas's museum collection are being preserved.
But first, the Arkansas Insurance Department yesterday released the rates that will be charged for policies sold through the insurance marketplace being set up as part of the Affordable Care Act. Four insurance companies that will be sold through the exchange will offer 71 qualified plans. And State Insurance Commissioner Jay Bradford says he's pleased with the premiums for those plans, but says he knows it will take a lot of coordination to make sure the insurance exchange works.
Everybody is taking it one step at a time. It'll be a little bumpy at first, but eventually it'll be smoothed out. You know, we've got several entities. You've got the insurance companies, you've got the Federal Department of Human Services, and you have also our State Department of Human Services. We're blending all of those entities into, you know, one outcome. So, and it's all new, you know, and so, but we'll get there, and we're looking forward to helping our Arkansas consumers.
Bradford says the rates were as much as 25% under what had been initially requested. Open enrollment begins a week from today, with coverage beginning at the first of the year. A 500,000 Arkansans are expected to sign up. We'll have much more about the healthcare enrollment plan in just a few minutes on Ozarks at Large.
The U.S. Census Bureau recently released details of its 2012 American Community Survey, which includes data that gives insight into poverty levels across the country and in Arkansas. The report shows Arkansas's poverty level for the year was at 19.8%, slightly higher than the previous year. Rich Huddleston is the director of Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. While he says one in five Arkansans are living in poverty, likely as a result of continuing recovery from the economic recession, Arkansas's poverty levels are similar to the state's southern neighbors who have historically also had high poverty rates.
I think for me, what is most troubling about the new poverty numbers is that it shows that nearly 29% of children living in poverty. And of course, like everybody's by now very well aware of all the research that's been conducted over the years that really showed that when children, especially young children, grow up in poverty, they're much more likely to be at risk of a lot of negative outcomes that can impact their ability to develop and succeed, and also how they do later in life.
He says two short-term measures that could help alleviate the state's high poverty rates would be implementation of the Affordable Care Act and the private option in Arkansas, which would help ensure those living in poverty and provide a safety net for future income, and the passage of a federal nutrition bill, known as food stamps or SNAP, to provide adequate nutrition assistance for those living on low incomes. But both of those measures have been politically contentious issues over the course of the past year. With much debate still circulating over Arkansas's implementation of the private option and the Republican majority in the U.S. House wanting to defund the Affordable Care Act, as well as the House's action of stripping the SNAP provision from the Farm Bill earlier this year. Huddleston says the political gridlock in Washington leaves few clear answers of how to address poverty.
It's a shame that we have federal policymakers who, quite frankly, are making decisions that are not in the best interest of many of their constituents. And if you look at the constituents in our congressional delegation, those are folks who would benefit the most, quite frankly, from the Affordable Care Act and from budget decisions concerning the SNAP program. How we move them to get them to where they need to be on those issues, that's a tough one, and I think it's the responsibility of all of us, of all the state citizens, to contact members of our congressional delegation and let them know where we think they need to be on these issues.
Huddleston says a long-term solution to high poverty rates in the South and elsewhere is to improve educational opportunities, particularly for those who are most vulnerable to poverty, to help insulate against the effects of future recessions.
Researchers at Arkansas Children's Hospital are continuing efforts to prevent childhood obesity. Dr. Elizabeth Borsheim is working with a team of six scientists to determine how metabolism, exercise, physiology, and nutrition affect weight gain.
We are in the process of building a physical activity lab where we will study the influence then of exercise on how carbohydrates and protein and fat is handled in the body and how that then in the long term can prevent obesity.
Dr. Borsheim says findings from the research could be used to curb negative health outcomes in children and adults, such as diabetes and other obesity-related illnesses.
Although several area colleges are reporting increased enrollment this fall semester, the overall college enrollment is down across Arkansas. According to the Department of Higher Education, just more than 170,000 students are enrolled at 2- and 4-year colleges in the state. But average enrollment at the state's 33 public colleges and universities was down 2%, though full-time enrollment was up slightly. 4-year college enrollment increased by an average of just under 1%, but enrollment at 2-year schools decreased by an average of 6%.
Beginning today, a portion of Huntsville Road in Fayetteville will be closed for sidewalk construction. The eastbound lane between Curtis Avenue and Happy Hollow Road will be closed between the hours of 7 a.m. and 3 p.m. through October 11th as crews build a sidewalk on the south side of the street. The section under construction is just the first phase in a new sidewalk that will stretch between Happy Hollow Road and Morningside Drive. The first section is being built using federal stimulus money obtained through the Arkansas Highway and Transportation Department. The remaining stretch of sidewalk from Curtis Avenue to Morningside Drive will be completed using funds from the city's capital improvement program.
The number of travelers flying out of Northwest Arkansas Regional Airport declined slightly during August. According to thecitywire.com, nearly 51,000 passengers flew through XNA during the month, less than 1% down from August of 2012. However, the first 8 months of the year saw more than 388,000 passengers travel through the airport, an increase of just more than 3% over 2012 totals. At the Fort Smith Regional Airport, the opposite trends occurred for the month. During August, more than 7,000 passengers traveled through the airport, an increase of more than 5.5% over August of 2012. But for the first 8 months of the year, the airport totaled nearly 57,000 enplanements, 2.3% lower than during the same period in 2012.
With deer season opening for bow hunters this weekend, the Bella Vista Property Owners Association is reminding residents no hunting is allowed on POA-owned private property, but the association regulations do allow bow hunting on certain areas of common property that are 50 yards away from homes, trails, golf courses, pavilions, parks, lakes, ball courts, buildings, facilities, or other amenities.
Partly cloudy tonight with lows from 53 in northwest Arkansas to 60 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley. Mostly sunny tomorrow with highs in the 80s. Partly cloudy tomorrow night with lows from 56 in northwest Arkansas to 62 in the Arkansas River Valley.
This is Ozarks at Large. One of the largest shifts in state policy in many years is approaching in Arkansas. The state's adaptation of the Federal Affordable Care Act begins with an enrollment period that arrives a week from today. The change has many filled with anxiety, others with anticipation, and almost everybody has questions. With October 1st just 7 days away, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas gathered a roundtable of people who've been closely watching healthcare policy evolve in Arkansas. That panel included the CEO of QualChoice Insurance, Michael Stock, Anna Strong, health policy analyst with Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families, and State Senator David Sanders, a Republican from Little Rock. Senator Sanders was a chief architect of the state's private option insurance plan passed by the Arkansas legislature earlier this year. Roby asked the panel members if Arkansas was ready for this big change in health care policy. Michael Stock from QualChoice Insurance answered first.
I think it's going to be a big change. A lot of different aspects of the way the health insurance is going to be marketed in the state going forward. People are going to buy health insurance a lot like they buy airline tickets now by going to Expedia.com. So it's going to be a big change in the market.
What's your sense, Anna?
You know, I actually was at a town hall in Fort Smith last night and had about 30 people lined up to ask questions about how they can get enrolled. They don't have access to affordable insurance today. I think consumers are ready for this. I think we're still reaching out to let people know more about it, but I think in general there are 500,000 people that are ready to get enrolled.
David?
Well, there's certainly people who are interested in signing up. The big question for me is it going to work? Is the infrastructure going to work? There's an enormous IT backbone that powers the system. So I think there are questions of how people feel, but there are also many operational questions and concern. Quite frankly, we don't know the answer to that. So
we're going to learn pretty quickly.
And yeah,
pretty soon we're going to find out if it's working or not. Well, Anna, you mentioned that there's 500,000 Arkansans that don't have health insurance coverage in the state of Arkansas. But we also hear statistics that 95-97%, depending on how you slice and dice it, of companies with more than 50 employees do offer health insurance already. Who is really going to be impacted by this? Who are these folks without insurance?
You know, these are working families, you know, maybe people who own a small business who may not be able to afford premiums for themselves or their employees. These are hardworking families. And most of the people who are going to be enrolling are working and they are above the poverty level. They just don't have access to affordable health insurance right now.
Not to repeat, Mike, but who do you guys see in your crystal ball? Who's your target market? Who do you see as possibilities? What's that kind of new customer looking like for you?
Well, like Anna said, there are a lot of people that just don't have access to care today to health insurance. But even in the small employer market, you said the majority offer coverage. We struggle with a lot of small employers to get 75% of their workforce to enroll in the coverage that they're offering. So a lot of people opt out of the coverage, even though it is offered by their employer, just because of the cost in that.
David, hypothetical situation. I'm an employer with, say, 10 employees. What are my options going to be? Maybe Michael has to jump in and help us out with a few options here. But, you know, is that target group going to be helped?
Well, so here's the thing. If I'm the owner of a business with 10 people, one, we don't even know the full impact of the President's Affordable Care Act. I mean, just last week they came down and said that if you are an owner of a small company and you don't tell your employees about their insurance options, you're going to be assessed a per day penalty. I think this whole enterprise in terms of, and so there's two things happening. Obviously, the rollout of the Affordable Care Act, and then what we did in Arkansas to try to respond to what I think is a poorly written and a poorly contemplated bill. I think it's going to be messy. I think it's going to certainly have a lot of hiccups maybe hiccup is too soft of a characterization.
Convulsions, is that the word you're looking for?
I think there are going to be a lot of problems. I think what we will end up with is the need for additional reforms, wholesale changes. You've seen, you know, disparate groups like the AFL-CIO talking about the need for change, and folks who are certainly on the conservative side. So I think what is going to happen is there's going to be broad consensus that, one, as originally passed, it doesn't work and it doesn't have the impact. And the truth is the health insurance affordable? Well, the Affordable Care Act mandates brand new coverages that, in a sense, will drive up the cost of insurance.
I want to come back to some potential changes a little bit later in our conversation here, but let's stick with the question here about the small business owner, the person that's not currently providing health insurance to their employees. They want to. Are they going to have more options under this plan?
Well, if there's a small employer who's not providing coverage today, they basically have two options. One is to buy coverage before the end of the year, and if they do that, they can buy under the existing laws in the state for small employers, and they would not then have to move into a metallic plan until maybe January of 2015 if they buy now. If they wait and buy starting January of 2014, then they'll have the option of buying one of the metallic plans, be it a platinum, gold, silver, or bronze, and those plans will have lots of different options for deductible levels and co-insurance levels and co-pays, just like the products have today, but they will cover a lot of new things.
And they're going to be more expensive, and that's the
point. They will be more expensive than products
today. I would like to toss in though, that businesses with 50 or fewer employees do not have to purchase health insurance, you know, provide health insurance to their employees, but those individual employees can go shop in the marketplace and find affordable coverage with subsidies for 95% of uninsured Arkansans. So I think there are going to be a lot of different options for businesses. They can buy in. Businesses with fewer than 25 employees may be eligible for a tax credit if they do provide insurance for their employees. So I think we have a lot of different things at play here, and I think it's every business has to look and see what's right for their business and for their employees.
Let's talk about why some of the plans may actually cost more. Let's talk about what some of the dynamics are going to be at work that are going to raise these costs. Obviously, there's some taxes tied to the Affordable Care Act, but what else do you see as driving costs up?
Well, I mean, so one of the key aspects to the Affordable Care Act as negotiated was this whole idea of a grandfathered plan. And that is, if you are a plan that has been in place or put in place before March 23rd, 2010, which was my daughter's 11th birthday, you don't have to face the full regulatory framework of the Affordable Care Act. If you purchased insurance or your company put forth a plan after that, you have to live with the full regulatory framework of the Affordable Care Act. And for many Arkansas families, many Arkansas businesses, they're in grandfathered plans. Mm-hmm. You know, the one I am in is a grandfathered plan. Our rate increase this year was simply 8%. But you have others who don't have that coverage or haven't had that coverage for that period of time that are going to see what has been characterized correctly as rate shock.
Anna and then Mike, what's going to drive costs?
I think we've been watching healthcare, the cost of health insurance rise independently of and before the Affordable Care Act was signed into law. And so I think there are healthcare is expensive, and there are a lot of factors at play in this. And I think that we see that, you know, people are getting more benefits. People are getting more bang for their buck. They're going to have benefits covered that haven't previously been covered. I think about maternity coverage, which is not available to on many commercially sold plans. I think about habilitative services for people who are born with disabilities. There are a lot of benefits that are coming into these plans that are going to make them richer packages for families, so that when they get to the hospital, their needs are covered.
Mike,
there are three things that I think are going to add to the cost of healthcare. One is, there are a number of benefits in the program that used to have cost-sharing elements where the insured shared in the cost with the insurer, and that's changed, so many of those things are free now. There are new benefits that have been added that never used to be covered before, and those have added to cost. And then the third thing is, there's a lot of new taxes that have been added. Probably at least 5% of every rate increase we're sending out is new taxes for next year.
And what he talked about are things that need to be changed about the law.
And possible changes to the law are covered in a moment when we continue with more from the roundtable about the approaching health care changes in Arkansas, just ahead on Ozarks at Large. And in about 10 minutes, a new theater season is almost underway at the University of Arkansas. We'll meet the cast of Clean House, a Pulitzer Prize-nominated play that opens October 4th. We continue now with a roundtable discussion about the changes in Arkansas healthcare laws. The next big step in the process is a week from today when residents can begin to enroll in new healthcare plans. Recently, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas talked about the impending changes with three people who have been watching the process closely: State Senator David Sanders, Anna Strong, a health policy analyst with Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families, and Michael Stock, the CEO of QualChoice Insurance. As As expected, with such a dramatic shift in policy, not everybody likes every part of the new law. The conversation continues as we hear from State Senator David Sanders.
In terms of the rollout, in terms of the effective date, I'm not sure because I think that uncertainty is going to prevail for quite some time. Even after January of 2014, there are going to be problems. I think what is going to happen, though, there will be consensus rather quick. What we have to do, I think, in America, and if you even look at some of the things that we've done in the private option in terms of injecting consumerism into the plan, Jeff talked about the fact that you're eliminating cost sharing and co-pays for a number of things. You know, people have to have some idea of what their health care dollar is being spent on and what they're spending on. You have to be able, I think healthcare in large part doesn't function as a market. In order to function as a market, you have to be able to make a qualitative and quantitative assessment, which is quality of care and price. And unfortunately, what came out of Washington negates both of those. There's not efforts to proliferate information on quality, and there's not certainly not information or the ability for cost sharing or even to make cost specific request or information or informed decisions. And that's very troublesome.
And I think you might have a contrary position to that.
Well, you know, I will say that as we move into this new world, and this is a big change. This is a big change to our world and the way we provide health insurance to people, and there are going to be glitches along the way. What we need to do is focus on improving those and moving forward. And this law is bringing health insurance to millions and millions of Americans that don't have it today. And if we can focus on fixing the problems instead of trying to stall it or stop it and move forward and bring families the benefits that they've been waiting on for a long time, I think we're at a good place. And regarding some of your questions about quality and cost, I think that we are doing some really innovative things here in Arkansas, separate from the Affordable Care Act, with our Payment Improvement Initiative, which I know you all are part of, and really trying to pay providers for quality and pay them for quality care and make sure that patients have the best outcomes for them as well.
Mike, what would bring more certainty to the market?
I think one of the challenges that we have to look at is the law as it's designed has done a lot to increase demand for healthcare services, and we've made it more accessible to people at a very low cost. But that is going to do nothing but drive up costs. If you increase demand without increasing the supply side of the equation, you're going to have a big increase in costs. We need to do more to increase the supply of healthcare providers in the marketplace, because that's what's going to help bring down cost.
Anna talked about this a little bit too. Mike, you've put a lot into the exchange. David, you've helped develop the private option here framework. And Anna, you've been deeply involved in a variety of different policy aspects here. Do you see any scenario where the baby gets tossed out with the bathwater? There is the push at the federal level to repeal Obamacare, as it's called, but do you see that as really realistically a possibility?
I think it really depends upon what happens October 1 and the first part of next year. If it gets launched and people begin to get accustomed to what the program offers, my experience through my lifetime is it's very, very hard for Washington to take things away that people have already gotten.
Anna? Yeah.
I will agree with that. I think that we are moving towards something that people have been waiting on for a long time. And I think it would be very hard to repeal it. I think, the bipartisan effort that had really, really incredibly strong support from our legislature will also be hard to undo. It's rolling forward. People are getting coverage on January 1st.
David. Well, so here's the thing. The fact of the matter is, if you want to draw a differentiation between policy and where we're headed, in Arkansas, the effort that we have, and I think will have to be in terms of amendments submitted to the existing waiver, one, the development of a health savings account offered for the private option, two, cost sharing, as Mike talked about, for people who are at 50% to 100% of federal poverty, and then the transition of existing populations off the Medicaid program onto the private option. Those are all things that go far to inject consumerism in healthcare. The Affordable Care Act does not do it. It goes in the opposite direction. And I think there are going to be some very serious questions that policymakers in Washington on both sides of the aisle are going to have to deal with after this is being implemented. And the question is, will they show the willingness to get down to brass tacks and to fix the problems?
Best advice that you guys would give a viewer, a listener, a reader who's going to see and read some of the comments that we're discussing here, someone who's trying to make sense of all this, what do you advise them to do at this juncture? It's because of all the turmoil that's coming. Mike?
Well, with any type of insurance, the thing I would advise people to do is buy it before you need it. because that's when it's going to be the cheapest for you. If you wait until you're sick, if you wait until you have a car accident and then go try and buy car insurance, it's going to be very expensive. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons that we're in this mess, because so many people just avoid the insurance until they have a condition, and then they find out that insurers don't want to cover them.
Anna?
I would definitely agree with that. Buy insurance before you need it. We have a lot of new options coming out. I actually brought along one of the brochures from the Arkansas Health Connector, which is where people are going to go. You can go there. You can check out what's going on in Arkansas, what your different options might be, and even use a calculator to try to find out what your premiums might be.
20 seconds apiece here. We'll start with David and work our way back around. Come January 1st, will health insurance in Arkansas be better or worse?
Options will be better, but again, it will be different for different people. So it's not an easy answer. It's not it's enormously complicated, and it's not simple at all.
January 1st, better or worse?
Have the insurance. You can keep your insurance if you already have it. 500,000 people are getting new coverage. I think it's going to be better.
Teacher.
Mike?
Not everyone can keep your insurance if you have it.
That's
only
right.
If you're grandfathered.
Yeah.
And I think the quality of care is going to be unchanged, but I think access to care is going to suffer because there's going to be so many more people trying to get into the system.
Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas talked with Anna Strong, a health policy analyst with Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families, State Senator David Sanders, a Republican from Little Rock, and Michael Stock, the CEO of QualChoice Insurance, about the approaching new health care plans in Arkansas. Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from four offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com. And Verizon, offering a wide selection of productivity-enhancing tablets for small business, including the Apple iPad. More information at a Verizon communication store near you or online at vzw.com/smallbusiness. And CEG Partners, using empirical data to better understand your customers' experiences and their loyalties. More information at cegpartners.com.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, the new president of Iran comes to New York for the UN General Assembly. His supporters say he needs to change the world's view of his country.
I think many of people off the board think Iranian people are something like terrorist guys, but as you know, they are not. The people of Iran are good persons.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Here and Now from NPR this afternoon at 1 o'clock on KUAF.
The University of Arkansas Museum was recently awarded a $30,000 grant from the Institute of Museum and Library Services to rehouse its collection of mammal skins and bones, which includes everything from Arkansas native skunks to a whale head, obviously not found in Arkansas. Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas visited the collection and has this report.
Though the University Museum closed in 2003, the collection remains intact and available for viewing upon request in the south half of the Arkansas Archaeological Survey building. Nancy McCartney is the curator of zoology.
Mostly this is to maintain the collections because each object can tell a story. And so if we have, 7 to 9 million objects, you could have 7 to 9 million stories, which we're not going to tell you today, but we have to preserve those stories because this is a little slice in time, and you will not be able to go back and get these things, and so we're trying our best to keep them so that in 50 or 100 or how many years, somebody comes back and decides, well, here's another angle of the story that hasn't been told, and we've got better equipment and technology, and we can tell a better story. So that's what we're trying to do here.
The Star Collection here is the archaeological collection. But among those 7 to 9 million objects are over 4,000 mammal skins, skeletons, and sets of bones. The money they have received from the Institute of Museum and Library Services will be to take care of the study skins.
If we had a deer hide, we would try to put it in with the rest of the bones so that if an archaeologist came and they wanted to identify some fragment of a deer, they could pick out a comparable bone and find everything. And if they had hair samples, they could take a couple hairs from the hide and so forth and look at them.
The first step in preserving a mammal takes place in the lab, where the stuff happens, cleaning off the specimen.
These are river otters that were collected for somebody's dissertation many years ago, and we used to have a dermestid beetle colony where you could strip the skeletons down and sort of make them look like beef jerky, and the larvae go after them and clean them up, and they do a wonderful job, and they work 24 hours a day, and they never complain, and they stink to high heaven. Well, we don't have a beetle colony anymore, so at this point, we have to do these by hand. So if you had been here yesterday, you would have seen the other two of the four people who are involved in this project, the graduate assistant and the work study student, sitting here picking off the flesh with tweezers. So this is not as effective, and they complain a great deal more than the bugs do.
Chemicals are not used, but each piece has to be stripped off, cleaned off, numbered, and cataloged so that one river otter does not get mixed up with another river otter. They have over 250 of them. Part of this project is to organize each specimen into proper taxonomical order, based on the book, The Mammal Species of the World. Part of that will be to upload data to the University of Kansas's site, VertNet, a national database of vertebrate collections, so that researchers anywhere can have access to the University of Arkansas collection. Inside the climate-controlled collection space, there are rows and rows of light gray containers, resembling oversized filing cabinets. They contain drawers of varying sizes.
Here are a bunch of spotted skunks, and these skunks and about 1,500 other specimens came from Dr. Seelander, who was an emeritus and now deceased professor of mammalogy at the university, and some of his graduate students have contributed the coyotes and the bobcats and things like that.
In her tenure at the museum, spanning part-time and full-time positions since 1974, McCartney has collected as many as Dr. Seelander did. Seelander wrote the book The Mammals of Arkansas. His collection has a record of where each specimen was collected. Mary Suter is curator of collections.
All that data stays connected with the animal through the catalog number, and sometimes the locality information is more or as important as the specimen itself. If people are doing studies of a range that a certain animal went over, you can look at old museum records and see if such and such an animal was found here, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, or so you can tell whether their range is expanding or contracting.
Because the collections capture a moment in time, never again will we have a spotted skunk from 1976 found in old Alabama. The database portion of this project will take about 50% of the time spent. The other half will be spent storing the specimens so that they meet the highest possible standards in care and management of natural history collections.
Okay, these are Viking cases. These are top of the line. And they're very expensive, but they're balanced and they're supposedly bug-proof because of all this little seal around here, which they probably aren't. This is a lovely cabinet as compared to some of those old ones down there that we are going to eventually phase out. So due to Mary's careful grant writing, we have been gradually accumulating more cases of good quality.
They have the seal, so they're airtight, and they keep the environment that your outside environment sealed into your inside, so that if you ever have like a system fail and your system goes down, the cases will maintain the temperature and humidity that they're supposed to. They are, despite Nancy's disclaimer, pretty much bug-proof. They're locking. They have a powder coat finish, which is standard.
Proper care is necessary because you just don't know what research question may come up in 50 years. Bugs are perhaps the biggest enemy to animal skins, and drawers have to be checked periodically. McCartney twists the latch that is sunken into the front of one of the chest-high cases and pulls out a drawer containing a collection of small rodents.
And one of the reasons we do that is that a lot of these things are kind of crowded. And you wouldn't think they would move around, but these boxes have shifted back and forth and just, have you seen Night at the Museum? Well, I think things walk around here at night or something because things move, and we're going to have some little individual trays so that instead of having everything moving around, you can pick up a whole tray if you want to go and study it and then put it back in place and it will be held so that it's not moving, which surely is not good for things.
She likens this organization to fitting a three-dimensional evolutionary tree of life into a two-dimensional series of drawers, hand-making the cardboard boxes and hand-labeling each piece. And the rodent drawer underneath a large beaver skin is perhaps Nancy McCartney's favorite specimen.
These are golden mice. There are 20-some species of little rodents in Arkansas, and you never see them. The ones you see are the house mice and the rats, and these are invasive species that are European or Asian or so forth that have come in and lived very successfully with man. But these are the little guys that are running around in your backyard and in the fields and so forth.
Collections has already received grants to reorganize and preserve the eggs and birds, amphibians, and fish. McCartney says that once the mammal project is complete, mollusks will be the only item left. But they'll have to wait about 2 years until the mammal project is completed. In addition to helping researchers write books, the collections are also open to classes at the university or to local groups that would like to visit, including art classes to draw the specimen, with about 600 people coming through in the last year. Items can also be loaned out to other museums. Shiloh in Springdale has a current exhibit, and beginning next month, one will be installed at the Butler Center in Little Rock. For information on the University of Arkansas collection, museum.uark.edu. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
It is Tuesday, September 24th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
We're fortunate to have Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers, with us.
And just when your hearing had returned...
Yes.
From Bikes and Songs.
Yes.
Nine Inch Nails is in concert.
Where?
Here?
New album, new tour. The closest they'll be to us is the Sprint Center in Kansas City, Missouri, and the Heifetz Arena in St. Louis. But how long has it been since they've been out on tour?
I honestly don't know.
We could walk down the hall and ask Rhonda Dillard, who works here, because she would be able to tell you.
She's probably met them, had a great time.
Probably.
They were one of the most popular bands of the 1990s and kind of gave credibility to industrial rock, mm-hmm. which I call metal. You know, it's Trent Reznor. You can find out more at tour.nin.com. Also, while you're looking for things to do in neighboring cities, Martina McBride will be at the Verizon Theater in Grand Prairie, Texas, suburb of Dallas, on October 3rd. And Queens of the Stone Age will be there on October 5th.
They're going to be at the Amp soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are.
In September in Tulsa, you can see Lewis Black at the Osage Event Center, September 28th. You can see the Steve Miller Band September 27th at the Hard Rock Casino. And if for some reason you can't see Vampire Weekend here, you can see them at the Brady Theater in Tulsa on October 5th.
Yes, they're here at the Amp next
tomorrow.
Yeah.
And if you're in Kansas City, Bass Nectar at the Midland on October 3rd and Blake Shelton at the Sprint Center on the same night.
All right.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. The annual Susan G. Komen Pink Ribbon Luncheon will be held Thursday, October 3rd from 11:30 a.m. until 1 p.m. at the Northwest Arkansas Convention Center in Springdale. Proceeds from this luncheon and silent auction will benefit Komen Ozark. Tickets and more information are available at komenozark.org or 750-PINK. The KUAF website giveaway is offering passes to the Yonder Mountain String Band's Harvest Music Festival, October 17th through the 19th in Ozark. Performers include Les Claypool's Dua De Twang, Green Sky Bluegrass, Justin Towns, Earl, and others. Workshops, various vendors, and outdoor activities will be offered. The drawing is Friday, October 4th, during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Registration is available at KUAF.com.
Autumn may be the busiest time for theater here. Between now and this time next month, at least 13 productions will be on stages from Fort Smith to Bentonville. In a few minutes, we'll meet the five people in the cast of The Clean House by Sarah Rule. That play opens the 2013-2014 season at the University of Arkansas. First, a thumbnail sketch of theater for the next 4 weeks. Your last chance to escape Kansas and watch flying monkeys soar over the stage at Rogers Little Theater is this weekend. RLT's production of The Wizard of Oz ends with presentations Thursday through Sunday. You can learn more at rogerslittletheater.org. The Art Center of the Ozarks also has a production this weekend with a young female lead character, Cinderella. The adaptation is new, but the handsome prince and Cinderella still meet, and they hope to live happily ever after. The production has 3 o'clock curtain time Saturday and Sunday afternoon at the ACO Theater in Springdale. Though the season opener for Theater Squared just closed, the professional company is opening its second production of the year Thursday night. 4,000 Miles will run through October 13th. We'll have more about the play by Amy Herzog on a future edition of Ozarks at Large. Also this weekend, an out-of-the-regular-season presentation from Fort Smith Little Theater. The Smell of the Kill isn't part of the FSLT ticketed season, but it promises to find comedy in heartbreak. In Michelle Lowe's script, three wives near divorce counsel each other and ultimately have to make decisions about the fate of their less-than-ideal husbands. Critics say the Broadway run featured a devilish story that was a black comedy masterpiece. The Fort Smith run is brief, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday only this weekend, but it's also inexpensive, just $5 at the door. You can learn more about the Smell of the Kills production by Fort Smith Little Theater at fslt.org. Walton Arts Center will host two brief runs of their own in October. For just one night, it's the nostalgic nod to baby boomers and the white bread so familiar to them at the time, the Wonder Bread years. Producers say the production walks a line between stand-up comedy and theater. The lone presentation at Walton Arts Center is the night of October 24th. Also at the Walton Arts Center in October is Disney's Beauty and the Beast. Five performances over 3 days, October 18th through the 20th. Ticket information for both of those productions at waltonartcenter.org. More Disney in October. The University of Arkansas Fort Smith Academy of the Arts will bring Aladdin for Kids to the UAFS at 2nd Street venue, one show only, October 26th at 2 p.m. Arts Live will have their original production of Zombie High School Homecoming opening, appropriately enough, on Halloween and running through November 3rd. More information at artslivetheater.com. Trike Theater has Peter Pan on stage next month from October 24th through the 27th. Details are at triketheater.org. And colleges and universities are opening their seasons this fall. Northwest Arkansas Community College in Bentonville begins the year with The Shape of Things. Neil LaBute's 21st century play, opened in London, has been adapted into a film and focuses on the loves and losses of college students in the Midwest. The NWAC production runs from October 4th through the 13th. The University of the Ozarks season begins with a weekend's worth of productions of Sarah Rule's In the Next Room or The Vibrator Play. The play, nominated for 3 Tony Awards, examines sexuality, intimacy, relationships, and technology. The play is on stage at the Walton Fine Arts Center in Clarksville, October 10th, 11th, and a matinee on the 12th. The play is inspired by real 19th century science, and it does include adult content. Patrons under 12 will not be admitted. And speaking of Sarah Rule, another of the playwright's scripts will be on stage in Fayetteville next month. The University of Arkansas's theater season opens October 4th with The Clean House, a play that's part magical realism, part a study of how communication can fail us, and part poignant comedy. Late last week, just before a rehearsal at the U of A Theater, we met the cast.
Curtis Longfellow.
Laura Shatkis.
Debbie Baños.
Guadalupe Campos.
Hannah Maxwell.
The five cast members play 7 roles in the UA production. The 2004 script, a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize, premiered at the Yale Repertory Theater and follows a young Brazilian woman who cleans houses for a living but wants to be a comedian. The cast is universal in their love for the script. Debbie Banyos says she was attracted to the work for several reasons, including the fact that it could only actually be realized like it should be on the stage.
It's so magical. I feel that it was made for the theater. It would have to be adapted a lot to be able to go into another media, into any other media. And I think it is so magical, and I love the characters, and there were characters that I could play, so I was very excited about it.
She says language and the failure of language to always keenly communicate what somebody is feeling is a key component to the play. Curtis Longfellow says drilling down into the play's words can reveal any number of reasons to embrace the script.
Something that really affected me was, I think there's a serious religious undertone that I find when I read it. And I think it's really interesting how she uses religion to justify what we do in life. And as a 22-year-old college student, I think I've got a lot of questions about religion still. So it was really interesting getting to do my own research on that and just finding out, you know, what we have done in the past as people to justify our decisions based on our religious beliefs.
If there's one thing this cast has done to prepare for the run of The Clean House at the University of Arkansas, it is prepare. The cast members say all five have studied some more, and discussed some more the relationships in the play.
We sort of sat around and went through the scene by scene, what are the forces at play that we're following, and the scene is never about what the characters are saying, so we were working out what the deepest needs of the characters are, really doing what we call table work. And I think it's some people embrace it and some people shy away from it, or not shy away is the wrong word, but I think the value of our meeting the other night was that we could speak the same language.
Yeah.
And Kate speaks the same language too.
Kate is Kate Frank, the visiting professor directing this version of The Clean House. She concurs that cast and crew have had a unique ability to speak the same language in rehearsals, something she says has made the process thrilling for her and has, she says, become more exciting as the rehearsals get closer to opening night. A fan of Sarah Rule's work, she says she thought this script had the chance to motivate a cast like it apparently has at the University of Arkansas.
Yeah, and that's part of the process of selecting a play that you really care about. When you read a play and you think, oh, this is one I think I'd like to direct, It jumps out at you and sort of jumps into your arms. And I think what made me love this play was actually how poignant it is and how funny it is at the same time. And I like that it's not quite realism, that it is magical, as Debbie was saying, and very theatrical. It's almost like a great opera, but with no singing.
All the discussion the cast has had outside of rehearsals to figure out how each of the characters relates to each other will pay off, they say. These are theater majors working to become better at what they hope will be their life's work, and they say you have to be able to know more about your character than just what you present to the audience.
We have different ideas, but also that we can come to a focus point. And so by speaking the same language and by being able to come and gather around and talk about the play, we can all together as a company, as a ensemble, take it in a direction that is effective, or that we feel that it might be effective.
Mm-hmm. And to give each other what we need. So mm-hmm. Laura and I are sisters, and we've talked a lot about our relationship in the past and, you know, what she would respond to. And so sometimes she's saying, you know, if you beat me down like that and yell at me, I'm not going to respond to that. So that might affect me, and that I make a softer choice and I don't sit so close, or I don't yell so loud. And so sometimes that analytic work can really result in some very different choices, vocally, physically, and emotionally.
Now the question is, will an audience member notice all of that work? Yes and no, if done well. The slight reaction of one character to another may not register specifically to somebody watching, but the entire experience then is better.
If an audience member were to watch the show, they might not know or be able to pinpoint exactly why this person is doing this or what is going on. But my hope, and I'm sure that it's the hope of the rest of us, is that what they will be able to see is the resonance of a real person, of all the years that this person lived with this, like what led them to this, so that the finished product, you see five people Well, it's actually seven people. Two of us play more than one character. But they see these people on stage, and they can see this person had this much life experience, and all of this led them to this place where they really need this in this moment.
As thrilling as each of the cast members say it is to work with this complex script that was awarded the 2004 Susan Smith Blackburn Prize for the best English language play written by a woman, it's also a wee bit terrifying. So why do this then? Why not study accounting or something else?
Coming from a background where I've, you know, worked in a pharmacy counting pills for 5 years, there is no thrill in that. And this is, I mean, it's exhilarating every time you go on stage. And that's bottom line.
You can see Guadalupe, as well as Laura, Debbie, Curtis, and Hannah, in the University of Arkansas production of The Clean House at the U of A Theater beginning October 4th. The play will run through Sunday, October 13th. You can learn more at drama.uark.edu.
So thank you so much, Lila Davidson, for being on the Tin Roof Project here at Tales from the South.
Why haven't I learned this before? I mean, my mind races with practical applications. Difficult interview questions, salary negotiations, and just about anything at a car dealership.
Tales from the South, Saturday afternoon at 3:30 on KUAF.
Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice. The 25th annual Chili Pepper Cross Country Race is Saturday, October 5th at the University of Arkansas's Cross Country Course in Fayetteville. Over 80 college teams and 120 high school teams will be competing, plus 750 runners will participate in 10K and the new open 5K run. Registration and more information available at chilipepperfestival.org.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Mansfield.
Mansfield, Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
Had the rundown of drama for the next month, and there was a production that I didn't have in the list.
Yes.
That I thought I would ask you briefly about.
Oh, dear.
Gridiron?
Yes.
That counts as theater, correct?
I mean, we perform in a theater. Does that work?
That's going to be under the umbrella title of theater.
Okay. Then sure.
it's area journalists and reporters and writers poking fun at the newsmakers from the past 12 months.
It is. It's set up very much Saturday Night Live, you know, that sort of sketch comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Our MC this year is Professor Gerald Jordan.
From the journalism department.
From the journalism department. And lots of funny skits are what I hope people think are funny skits. So the journalists get together and they write the skits and we sing, dance, act. I say all these things with quotation marks.
Right.
We perform on stage. There is a bar, which helps a lot. So
Friday, it's a cash bar.
It is a cash bar.
Money raised.
The money raised goes to scholarships. We do this in partnership with AAUW, the American Association of University Women. This is the University of Arkansas chapter, of course. And then Rogers Little Theater graciously gives us a space, and they get to keep monies from the bar.
All right. And it's the first weekend of October, is that
yes.
correct?
Right. Yes, that Friday and Saturday. There is a performance on Thursday night. It's dress rehearsal, so if you can't make it to the other ones, you can come to that. I need to get you a ticket, so just email me at ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. I will get you a ticket. And it's also a food drive that night. So all you need is that ticket and a canned food item.
There you go. Dress rehearsal, no cash bar.
There is a cash bar this year. They are opening it up this year. So.
See, you leave journalists to their own devices long enough and things happen.
So, okay. No, well, we've been getting larger crowds on Thursday, yeah. People that can't go and things like that. So, yes, no, they've opened up the bar this year.
Last time I talked to you, you were about to go to the Rogers High School football game.
I did. It was a good game.
It was a fantastic game. Ended on a safety.
Ended on a safety. Mounties won.
All right. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
You also went to Mike's Balloons and Barbecue?
I did. I went Saturday? No.
I haven't seen the numbers
Friday
yet.
Friday night. I went Friday night, yes.
I haven't seen the numbers yet, but I think it felt larger than the past few. Just to me.
Okay.
We'll find out soon.
All
right. This is KUAF 91.3 FM. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back with another brand new edition tomorrow on KUAF.
Happy Tuesday.